Compass has been ordered to hand over its Anywhere deal documents to Zillow. Meanwhile, five more brokerages have settled in the Gibson Commission lawsuit. The FTC takes a beat due to the government shutdown. FICO is upending the credit industry by removing the middleman. Plus, we have a special guest, Jim Dalrymple, the interim editorial director at Inman News, to break down how all of these headlines affect agents, brokers, and consumers. Welcome back to The Clean Close. A federal judge has ordered Compass to hand over documents tied to its Anywhere real estate acquisition to Zillow, part of the ongoing lawsuit over Zillow's listing access standards. Zillow is arguing that Compass's claims of irreparable harm don't line up with the company's confident financial posture after the acquisition. But the court granted expedited discovery, so that means Compass has to share all the internal communications, financial statements, and deal representations from that merger. Compass pushed back, saying that Zillow's request was broad and burdensome, and insisted those details aren't relevant to the current injunction issue. I mean, Zillow also tried to redepose Robert Refkin, and the court said no, at least for now. So right now, Zillow has to first review the newly produced materials and then decide if they want to make another case for deposing Refkin. So the court is basically saying, turn over the paperwork, and depending on what's in those documents, the stakes could shift, not just for Compass, but for how brokerages communicate financial confidence in public versus in court. Personally, if I was Compass, I would be very, very nervous about this requirement. I don't know that it means that all of these documents become public, but it certainly means that there are insider information that is going to be essentially given to the enemy, and I don't know what it could change. I'm very curious to hear what Jim has to say about that one. Also, I don't know if you guys noticed, but Zillow is now inside of ChatGPT. So Zillow has integrated its listing search into ChatGPT. It is an app plugin. Essentially, if you just type in like, what's the current price on XYZ property, it'll pull the data from Zillow. So under this setup, ChatGPT becomes like the front end, and Zillow is what it is using to provide real estate listing information. The listing data is attributed to agents and MLSs. However, some people think it may violate the MLS IDX rules because the data is being republished by ChatGPT, but ChatGPT is not paying any licensing fees, so it's not covered under any data licensing agreement, which is what all aggregators are required to have. So it'll be interesting to see. I think it sets a precedent for how new AI technology is going to interface with the existing data licensing standards that the MLS has already established, and IDX standards that they've already, you know, established. I personally, when I use Perplexity or even when I'm searching things on ChatGPT, I am seeing it pull from Redfin and Zillow, of course, already, which is where a lot of people would pull accurate listing data from anyway. So I'm not sure if it changes the game except in one way, which is it kind of ties Zillow to users of ChatGPT, giving them a first access to the consumer, which we know is what they've been battling for this entire time. So I don't love that. I don't love the part that it gives them, again, a little advantage. So while all these web like lawsuits are going on over here, Zillow is playing like a long game with this ChatGPT integration. And I'll be curious to see if other real estate search portals follow suit, or if there's even room to do that. Okay, there have been five more settlements granted preliminary approval in the Gibson case. I don't know if you guys remember the Gibson case, but it was another commission lawsuit that had to deal with how buyer side commissions are advertised and negotiated. So it allows the settlement process to move forward, but it's not a final decision yet. The approvals add to a growing wave of settlements across the major commission cases, collectively topping $1 billion in agreed payouts industry-wide. What I'm curious about is how many of those people who are getting money from these lawsuits are actually have actually bought a house like maybe bought a house right after they filed the lawsuit. I don't know. And used a buyer agent and didn't pay the buyer agent because the seller was still paying. I wonder. I want to know what that percentage is. And also, I wonder how much of this $1 billion is being taken by the attorneys. Because online, which I will get to later, there are so many attorneys, you know, masquerading as consumer advocates who are acting as if consumers should go to an attorney instead of a real estate agent because of conflicts of interest or whatever. But, you know, they're talking about our pesky little commission that we ask for being overrated or something, that we don't earn it or whatever, when they're taking 40% in some cases of these attorney's fees from these class action lawsuits. So it's quite hypocritical to think that a lawyer who makes his money off of legal issues is going to be the one to protect you. I feel like in states where there are lawyers involved in the process, they just cause more trouble, delay, the closings take longer, the attorneys try to rewrite the contract. You know, I've heard that complaint quite a bit in states like New York. I don't think it's a good idea to try and replace your real estate agent with an attorney. But anyway, so it's great that some of these are coming to a close. Like every week they're wrapping up some of these lawsuits. But I still think there's a line of inquiry that we should have about how hypocritical the percentages that these attorneys are making on these class action lawsuits are, given what the nature of the actual cases are. Okay. The FTC lawsuit is paused due to the government shutdown, but five more states have joined in suing Redfin and Zillow for their rental syndication agreement. So realestatenews.com reported on October 6th that the FTC's antitrust case over the $100 million rental syndication partnership between Zillow and Redfin has been temporarily paused due to the government shutdown, but Arizona, Connecticut, New York, Virginia, and Washington have now joined the FTC side, filing their own complaints over the same deal. I'm thinking like Zillow must have 100 attorneys on staff working on all this stuff. The lawsuits argue that the partnership gives the two portals too much control. We went over that in the last episode. Zillow and Redfin are saying the arrangement benefits both partners and renters and landlords because it consolidates and streamlines rental data. Okay. So even as the federal case is slowing down, the states jumping in is keeping it relevant, keeping the heat on, showing that it's not just a federal issue. The states are getting involved. So this is an interesting, like, all sides attack on Zillow and obviously Redfin, but really I'm just, yeah, Zillow. I wonder if they can stand the rain. Okay, FICO. FICO scores are the way that lenders determine your credit viability for loans. And so there is now a new program called the Mortgage Direct License Program, launched by FICO, that allows lenders to purchase credit scores directly from FICO, which means it's going to cut out Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. FICO says the change is going to increase price transparency and reduce costs. They are charging $4.95 royalty per score, which I'm sure will go up with inflation and as they become the only game in town. And they're saying it's 50% cheaper by eliminating those other three companies. I wonder if those other three companies are just gonna go out of business or what. I honestly don't know what the impact's gonna be, but Bill Pulte, who is the FHFA director, said it's a first step in the right direction. Now, the Consumer Data Industry Association, which represents the credit bureaus, says it's going to raise overall costs, it's going to introduce new operational costs, and it's going to, you know, eventually these costs are going to be passed on to consumers, so it's going to increase the cost that consumers have to pay for their credit scores. So, I don't know. We shall see. Right now, we're going to get into all of these headlines with our special guest, Jim Dalrymple, who is a real estate and technology journalist and also the interim editorial director at Inman News. If you love what we're doing over here at The Clean Close, if you love talking news headlines and being informed about what's happening in our industry, please like, comment, subscribe, drop me a comment. You want to be considered to be a guest? hey, DM me. I'm always open to hear new voices who want to talk about these hot headlines. Now back to the show. Joining me to discuss this and more is Jim Dalrymple, the interim editorial director for Inman and a real estate and technology journalist. Welcome to The Clean Clothes, Jim.
Thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So tell me, what in your opinion are the hottest headlines right now in real estate?
Yeah. So, you know, it was funny. The summer was pretty slow and then we entered the fall and it was like someone flipped a switch and the news has been sort of fast and furious ever since. So I think the biggest news that we had is this potential consolidation or merger between Compass and Anywhere. So this is obviously two sort of behemoths of the industry potentially merging. And I think that that kind of branches out into every sort of other part of the industry. And we can get into that as
well. Yeah, I would love to get into that. You've been talking to a lot of broker owners, independent broker owners, boutiques, big guys, Compass execs, all these people. What is the feel from all the different points of the industry on this? Like, what are you getting? Are there any themes showing up?
Yeah, so, you know, when we first found out about this, we sort of, what we anticipated would be the response would be obviously sort of joy from kind of the Compass
executive
people. Suite, yeah. Right? And the Anywhere executive suite also, right?
Right.
And that seems to be the case. They are, when these big mergers happen, you know, the C-suites of the companies involved usually are pretty quiet because they're kind of bound by a lot of regulatory
NDAs and yeah.
Right. And so, you know, what little we're getting from them is pretty positive and optimistic. One thing we thought that might happen would be that a lot of like the indies and the smaller brokerages would maybe be
freak
a little
out.
Worried, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, freak out, kind of, you know, like that kind of thing. But, you know, that actually hasn't really been the case. What we've been seeing is a lot of the indies have basically said, hey, we think that there's a huge number of agents in this industry that don't want to be at like the giant company and want to have kind of like that smaller boutique feel to their business. And so a lot of folks are telling us they think this is going to be like a huge recruiting opportunity for them. And we've seen some of that already playing out.
Where, yeah. I've seen like Sirhant did a video like, hey, he made like a hotline or something like that.
Yeah.
Like if you're like disgruntled by this news, but you know, I don't know if that's true or not. I do think in a way it's the same battle we've always fought because as an indie myself, we're always up against the big guys. It doesn't matter if it's Compass as Anywhere or Christie's as Anywhere or Sotheby's as Anywhere. I mean, they're all big guys. And so in a way, maybe it puts it in front of the consumer if they even care. But I've seen some people really making the case that the agent is chosen by the customer and that will never change, right? I don't want to diminish
agreed.
The power of brokerage, though, because I do think that it is important. What I think is the thing that we're not going to see. All the logos will be different, right? Like you're going to choose, you think you're choosing a different brand, but it's the back end of it that's going to potentially be more uniform. So that part. So if like an agent really wants to have more personal leverage, it's possible that they're like when I worked for NRT, they had these rules and the rules were the rules, whether you were at Weicker, Coldwell Banker, like whatever, you know? So I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like it just gives them less leverage. Like agents are going to have less back end leverage, but for the consumers, they're not going to realize really probably much difference in terms of like it all, because it's not going to all become Compass, you know, they'll still have these individual brands. So they say.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was actually one of the questions we wanted to answer was, you know, like a year, 2 years, 3 years from now, what's going to happen? Like, is there going to be a Coldwell Banker, right? And so what we started doing is I had our reporters reach out to recent Compass acquisitions, right? At properties in Chicago, Ladder and Bloom on the Gulf Coast. Sorry, can't talk today.
Okay.
And so we started asking folks at those companies, how did this go? Was this a positive or a negative experience? We really didn't go into it, you know, with one preconception or another, but we wanted to understand how it happened. And, you know, we found that in some cases, the Compass branding has started to kind of come in and replace some of the older branding.
Oh.
Pacific Union is a case, is one of these cases where, you know,
yes,
it's like that's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. But we didn't find like a lot of agents who were like, man, I hated this. It was awful. And probably that's because the ones who did left those companies. But,
right,
you know, like it seems like this is, it didn't sort of throw the life of every agent in those companies into chaos, if that makes sense. You know,
right. So, well, there is always this moment. I feel like mergers and acquisitions always happen in these markets where we know that the market's been down since the interest rates have been up. And we're at probably somewhere near what we think is the bottom. And there are these projections of rate cuts, even though they might not be dramatic. It's still like there's some consumer optimism. I'm seeing a little bit of a pickup right now. So it's like if you would have closed this deal last month, it would have been like perfect timing if that's what your numbers are based on, because it's probably the three weakest years of anywhere. And there won't be those that many weak years moving forward. But some of those brands they acquired certainly have a reputation for not being as tech forward. You know, I'm sure you've seen those Instagram memes where they're like, if your brokerage was a TV show, and it's like, you know, it's got the Coldwell Banker agents and the Weichert agents and the like EXPs and whatever. And they all have their own kind of character, you know, like a caricature.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
You know, Better Homes and Gardens. Like, what do you think of when you think of Better Homes and Gardens? Like, as a consumer? You think of the magazine.
Yeah.
You think of, like, Coastal.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think of the magazine, actually.
Older
yeah.
women or something, right? Like, kind of older women knitting or something. Like, there's, like, a... there's just a reputation with that brand that it's not, like, on trend, innovative. So I wonder if they're going to pick and choose which brands live and which brands don't. I wouldn't
that
be
would
surprised
be my guess.
If they don't.
What I've seen, like the chatter, you know, like as we've talked, and I don't want to be clear, like sometimes journalists will have sort of like the inside scoop, you know, and like this is sort of just pure speculation talking to people, like not, you know, it's not like.
Yeah, it's just you and me. Nobody else is listening.
Right, right.
Don't worry, Jim.
but yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of people speculate that like they're not going to sunset the Coldwell Banker brand, right? Like that's too old and storied and powerful. But yeah, some of the smaller brands definitely, I think, I think that we see, like with Pacific Union, we did see that eventually go away. And like, I think that that's seems like a likely outcome here as well.
Yeah, so maybe some of the ones that are a little outdated. Yeah,
yeah,
Properties. At Properties. Wasn't At Properties kind of like a cool brand? Weren't they like cool?
I mean, yeah, I think they're cool. They're really active in the Chicago area and kind of the Midwest. I don't live there, so I don't see them a lot. But yeah, they've been very tech forward. They, you know, they have kind of a young vibe, that kind of thing. So, and that brand lives on, right? That's still.
Oh, that brand is living on. So then you said, you have mentioned like maybe some of them were starting to see Compass like branding roll in. So maybe that's not.
Yeah, that's more like on the Gulf Coast and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Got it. Well, what do you think about the Zillow versus CoStar? Really, Zillow versus everyone right now. It feels like Zillow is getting hit with lawsuits left and right. We've got Zillow Redfin. We've got Zillow Compass. We've got Zillow CoStar. We've got Zillow FTC.
Right.
I guess that's a Zillow Redfin. But, you know, what is happening? What's your intel?
I mean, for folks who aren't following it, and it's hard to follow, there's so many assaults. It's like they're fighting a battle on five different fronts all at the same time. And, you know, like that's what's to be expected, right? If you're the king of the hill, everyone's coming for you. And they are, whether you love Zillow or you hate them, they're definitely like the biggest player in that space, in the portal space.
They're the biggest player in the portal space, no question. And I remember when CoStar, actually at Inman, you know, one of the years that I came right after Andy gave his presentation, it seemed like they were going to pump a lot of money into homes.com and really try and build that as a competitor to Zillow. And you saw the Super Bowl ads, you see they're doing advertising. Obviously, CoStar still has quite a big chunk of the data. Their approach is a little bit different to data, right? They own some of the images. That's another lawsuit that CoStar's in, right?
Yep.
With Zillow, with the licensing. But from an agent point of view, when they emailed us, called us and said, hey, you know, we're agent centric. You can have your name and photo on your own listing. What rocket science, like this idea is just innovative. They're like, yeah, but it's your membership to Pro is based on your production level, okay? And for me, they were saying it was going to be like $2,800 a month or something. I felt was insane because they don't have the views, in fact, to yeah. support the prices they were charging. And I'm like, is this too much too fast? Like, are they really a contender here? Like, what do you think the future of homes.com is? Do you think it can ever rival Zillow?
You know, it's a good question. I think that, you know, when I was also there when Andy Florance, CoStar CEO, he's such a bomb thrower. You know, we try to be impartial in terms of like, we're not rooting for or against CoStar, for or against Zillow, right? But
of course,
we do like it when there are colorful characters we get to cover in the real estate industry, right? And so I like covering Andy Florance because he will say his mind, he'll speak his mind. When that happened, actually, there were a lot of people in the industry who were really excited because there's like a certain frustration with Zillow among the agent community in some places. Some people love it, some
100%.
People don't. 100%. Right. But like we also monitor like a lot of agent forums and stuff like that just as we look for story ideas or look for folks to talk to about kind of the state of affairs. And, you know, so something that we've seen, I think, over the last few years is some of that initial excitement about homes.com has sort of kind of what you were saying, like people are finding that maybe it's not what they wanted. Right. Yeah. And like, again, this isn't to say it's not working for anybody. I'm sure it's working for someone, but it was like that initial honeymoon phase has passed and everyone's kind of like fighting in the mud now.
Well, here's the thing. Homes.com, this is just my personal point of view. Okay.
Yeah.
As a search portal, I kind of like it. It has neighborhood stuff. It gives you a little bit more than Zillow does. And it's not trying to constantly sell you something as a client searching, as a person searching. It's not like, use our lender or, you know, use our referral partner. It's not like constantly on your ass to sell you something, which I feel like as Zillow reaches into this one ecosystem moment that it's trying to create, and I know there are other companies that are trying to do that too, it kind of cheapens the user experience. So I don't know if it will shift completely to homes.com. I don't think a lot, you know, people still use realtor.com. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Which is crazy to me. Yeah. Is realtor.com number two?
You know, that's actually a huge point of contention.
Yeah.
CoStar says that homes.com is number two. Realtor.com disputes that.
So, right. Yeah. I haven't seen homes.com even come close to Zillow. Like not even close. Like Zillow is number one search platform by so much. And then I thought realtor.com was two, which I find very interesting because as an agent, anytime you get leads from realtor.com, they are spam. It's not owned by NAR anymore. And that was our moment as an industry, I think, as the association, to basically create what homes.com is now trying to sell us, which is our listing, our face, our contact information, whatever, you know? But the thing is, I think Zillow's taking a big gamble on the idea that people will feel safe. They don't need competition. The financial incentives will be enough for them to just stay on one platform. And I think they're doing that because their previous income stream was agents. I think that was their number one income stream. We're literally paying for our biggest competition. We are the reason they exist.
Right.
And we are also their number one way of staying alive. And I think they're trying to diversify that, especially because buyer enthusiasm has gone down as the rates have gone up. And they've probably lost a little bit of that commodity that they're selling, that right, those inquiries, the buyer lead gen. And now I heard, and you tell me if you heard this, that they are incentivizing, they're telling Zillow Flex agents, if you get your buyer placed with a Zillow lender, we're gonna get you better leads. Have you heard that?
I have heard I have not heard that directly. I don't.
Okay.
I'm always reluctant because I haven't confirmed it, but I have heard chatter about that. Yeah.
You've heard chatter about it, right? I've seen social posts. We put it on the last episode.
Exactly.
Some lender brought this up to me. If it is true, which may be something you can get into, maybe you can get some secret sources and kind of get down to it. This actually is feels like a major conflict of interest, you know, and there are so many rules that we've had to live by as agents that for some reason Zillow has gotten out of, like, totally seems to get out of every time.
Yeah.
I have a love-hate relationship with Zillow. I don't want to pay for my own leads that way. Like, I feel like you're, you know, by complicity with our MLSs, we have been robbed as agents. The fact that this has gone on with our consent, in a way, people have not been outraged as I have been over the years. They're starting to get that way. Sometimes they do. But then, so that's the part I hate about Zillow. I hate that our industry has essentially leveraged the literal thing we have, which is our inventory, and handed it over to Zillow on a silver platter. They're a portal hybrid. There aren't special rules for them. And now they're going into this lending, title, escrow, all this one platform, all that space. There's a conflict of interest. There's no competition. I just hope that someone steps in and says, no, we can't. Buyers need to be, you know, it's a free market. Like, they need to be offered multiple options, and it's not in the best interest of the client to have this be fed to them this way. You know, that's just my personal thought. But Zillow was the only one. And again, this is being challenged now with this Compass Anywhere thing, but they were the only ones. NAR couldn't do it. Compass is Zillow is the one that stuck it to Compass with the private listings exclusion. Like, what do you think is the future of that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that what we see, I think there's a couple of different issues that the question raises. One is we see Compass sort of expanding horizontally, sort of a horizontal integration where they're getting a lot of brokerages, right?
Yep.
And then, but we also see someone like Rocket expanding vertically, right? So Rocket was historically mortgage. Now they've got Redfin, which is a brokerage and a portal, and they've got Mr. Cooper,
which that's what Zillow's doing. Servicing.
Right. And so the question, I think, is like, is the vertical integration a bigger threat to Zillow, or is the horizontal integration a bigger threat to Zillow? And like with Compass, what I think the challenge here is the listings, right? Robert Refkin, the CEO of Zillow, has explicitly said that his vision for real estate is informed by the video streaming platforms, right? Where 10, 15 years ago, you had Netflix. Everyone had a Netflix account. That was it. Hulu came along and it was like a free thing. You had YouTube, but really it was just like Netflix. But today, now you've got to subscribe to Netflix and Hulu and HBO and Disney Plus. And
I can't even believe that you are saying this, because this was my fear. This actually hits on that he's going to try a subscription model for their listings. For agents affiliated or something. This was a fear of mine.
Yeah, the details, like, this was a comment I think he made in an earnings report, and he didn't go into details. He wasn't like, we're going to do subscriptions or something like that. But whatever they do with it, the question is, does Compass sort of take control of enough of the listings that a consumer who goes to buy a house feels like they've got to check Zillow and they've got to check compass.com.
Right.
And then when they've got to do that,
that's the play. Or they go back to Zillow and they say, listen, checkmate, you know, now you thought you had us, but actually we've got you. So you either let us play by our rules and give you listings when we want to, if we want to, because we're pulling out a NAR, or you're going to lose all of our listings and we're going to put them on Compass, and people can go look at Compass, go look at Zillow, go look at Redfin, go look at this, that, and the other thing. And it's going to turn into a very messy, complicated place, which I think actually I've experienced personally. That is how it felt during the boom when buyers were coming to us, because these Compass agents were so pressing them on the significance of the off-market listing network. Clients would come to us and say, do you have access to the private listing network? And there were like Compass agents kind of black market, giving other agents at other brokerages that they were friends with, like, access, Because I think that on some level, even if you want to say we want an advantage, and I'm sorry to cut you off, I'll just say this.
No, you're fine.
There is something inherent in most real estate agents I know that want to win on an equal playing field. If you, that is something that is tied to our sense of like equality of the ethics of our business. And if we lose that, I think we're losing something that's at the foundational core of our profession. And we, as it is, struggle with consumer trust. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think there are a few different outcomes here. I mean, I am a person who always dreams of moving to the French countryside or Tuscany, right?
Yeah.
And because of, I mentioned that because as a result, I spend a lot of time looking at European listings.
Right,
and
right.
It's a fragmented marketplace. It's such a pain. Like, right. You never know what is available. You've got to look on a dozen different brokerage websites.
Yep.
I think that would be a unfortunate outcome if the US market turned into that. But I think there's also a world in which that this Compass Zillow fight doesn't turn into that, right? Like, you know, one of the arguments that the Compass and sort of like the proponents of the Compass vision are making right now is that we're doing private listings, but most of those listings do eventually make it to the MLS. And maybe that continues to be the case. Or,
but don't you think, but wait, can we talk about this just one sec?
Yeah, yeah.
They're making it sound like, look, this is just seller choice, you know? But one of the things that they say is we can essentially price test the listing, okay, to our select group of agents, and then we're marketing it, and we're not racketing up the days on market. Okay, that's part of that.
Sure, yeah, like the negative insights, yeah.
Doesn't that feel like unfair to the rest of us who are playing by the rules? And one other thing, Refkin publicly saying, we're not going to enforce clear cooperation at Compass, and our association, who has literally made all of us abide by this hideous policy, and I am not a fan of the policy, but we all have to abide by it, stood down, didn't say a word, unless you heard something I didn't hear. Did you?
No, I haven't heard anything different than you, but I do think that like this is sort of another component. We're talking about sort of Compass versus Zillow here, but I think that you know, a lot of indie brokers were saying, hey, I'm excited, I'm gonna recruit against this. But I do think that sort of the longer term outcome there is that like you could choose to do this too, right? You could choose to test the days on market, test the prices, but as an indie, you don't have 300,000 listings, right?
Of course not. And that's the thing. That's the thing.
So it's hard.
It's hard because is it an unfair advantage when some brokerages are allowed to make their own rules and play by them while the rest of us are expected to abide by our association rules or get penalized, okay?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like gun laws, right? Like we can outlaw guns, but will criminals give a shit if the guns laws are tightened? No, because regular people are not like breaking laws. We will abide. But the people who are criminals break the laws. So they're going to continue to do. So to me, it's like you guys are the police policing people who are like not, you know, who are trying to follow the law. That's the problem with NAR issuing any kind of penalties for people who don't follow clear cooperation when you literally have an entire brokerage, which is now going to own quite a bit of real estate capital in America, saying, I don't like the policy. I'm not abiding by it.
Well,
you know?
Yeah. For me, I mean, I feel like whether it is fair or not is, I mean, if I were a broker, I would have an opinion on that as a journalist covering it. I feel like it's not necessarily my call to make on the fairness of it, but I do think maybe a useful analogy here is retail, right? One of the questions I love to ask people is, you know, in the 1960s, right? If you wanted to go shop for something, you went to your downtown of your city and there was 1,000 mom and pops. And today you've got like Walmart, Target, and Amazon, right? And so like, are we moving to... The Amazon of real estate is sort of a cliche at this point, but like, are we moving to kind of that world where...
Like a virtual real estate world, you mean? Like, for example, actual brick and mortar spaces? Is that what you mean?
I mean, I think that's another component of this, an EXP type model. But what I really mean is just instead choices. Of hundreds of small or thousands of small players, two or three big players are just really dominating in a way that doesn't happen so far. A lot of people, when I ask that question, do seem to think that that is a future that lies ahead.
I mean, it certainly could be a future that lies ahead if all of these things line up, right? If somebody that is, if Compass decides to take this mass of real estate, all these real estate brokerages and all these people, and allow even more of them to keep their listings out of the public's eye, except maybe by a subscription or your agent subscription or whatever, you have to affiliate with them, okay, with a gun to your head if you want access to the listings, which I think is totally antithetical to the principles that we sign up for when we become real estate agents. Like, under all is the land, there's a higher ethos to our job that is getting lost in these tech wars, which, again, side thing, I found really interesting Kevin Sears thing saying realtors need to remember, who we serve. And I talked about that on the last episode too, because I actually think we can't forget who we serve. We're always trying to serve our clients better. Meanwhile, our industry is being affected by these portal wars and by people who have a lot more power than us. Like, what's my little voice in it when essentially, in the name of consumer choice, all of our choices are going to be reduced to three, to Target, Walmart, and Amazon.
Well, and
it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I will say though that one of the things, like, I've moved a lot, just for work and being restless, buying one house and selling it. And, I will say that, I've used agents for almost all of my first transaction. I didn't actually, but subsequent to that, all the times I bought or sold a house, I used an agent. And, like, the first several, I don't even know what brokerage they were at. This kind of goes back to the point you were making a second ago. Like, I chose them based on them.
Right.
Not based on the company that they were with.
Make sense when you're a buyer. Okay. I can see how that would make sense. When you're listing a property, the rules change. The marketing matters more. The audience matters more. The reach matters more. The access matters more. Like, all these things matter more. And, again, as an indie, and, when I was talking with Vanessa Bergmark, she said this is the reason why we are still alive, is because we're indies. We can turn on a dime. Yeah. We can change. But as an indie, it pains me to think that we will all be, in order to do our jobs, it will be made more difficult by these acquisitions that are happening, and that consumers will actually end up having less choice. In the name of what? It's like a power move that I'm not sure is in the best interest of consumers. In fact, if my fears about their intention are true. I'm gonna take a quick break here and we'll be right back. If there's a product that you think our audience would love to see, be it tech or otherwise, I am a big fan of home fragrance sprays, as you might have noticed, please drop me a line, courtney@acme-re.com, or you can put something in the comments and we will take a look. Okay, I'm going to turn topics for a second, because the other major disruptor to our industry that we've been talking about for years but is finally starting to get some play, I think, is AI. And since you're a technology journalist, I would love to know what your thoughts are on the AI revolution in real estate, and where you see it being useful and where you see it being maybe a distraction.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, at the most basic level, I was at one of our events in Miami, I think, and someone on stage was like, hey, who in this room is using, like, ChatGPT and stuff?
Right.
And every single hand went up, right?
So, of course.
I think that it is sort of already translating into sort of like smaller scale efficiencies, like listing description, stuff like that. The stuff that's great. I don't get, like, really fired up about that kind of, like, lower level stuff, because I think it's happened and it's here, and it saves everyone a little bit of time. I think that, like, the more fundamental kind of stuff that's happening with AI. We reported just recently, for example, that Zillow has partnered with ChatGPT or OpenAI.
Oh, yes. Yep. Just talked about it.
I don't want to, like, harp on Zillow, because I think, again, I have
Zillow, my God, another headline. Yes.
but yeah, there's this partnership with Zillow and OpenAI that allows you to sort of access listings and potentially MLS data. There's sort of an ongoing debate about whether this is proper or not, but whatever happens with that debate, I think that what we're seeing here is that it's sort of in the way that Google search has changed, where now you have like results at the top of your page
that are AI
translated mm-hmm. into like real impacts to like media companies, right? Like a company like CNN or the New York Times is getting less traffic,
yep.
and that impacts their business because of AI's results. This is
yep.
this is going to translate into which listings get seen, which agents yeah. get seen. It's fundamentally going to change consumer behavior, and so I think that's
yes.
One of the big sort of frontiers right now is what
agent visibility.
Yeah, exactly.
In the AI portal. This is a very relevant moment. Okay, so I just did a little search myself.
Yeah.
And I searched like top realtors in West Adams. Like we're in one of our offices in West Adams, our yeah. studios in West Adams. And you know, by far, we sell quite a bit of real estate here. And there were agents that popped up in that AI response from Google that do no business, like maybe sold one house last year. I'm like, how the hell are they getting in this? But I saw Gary Vaynerchuk talking at a conference, and he basically said, if you are a real estate agent or whatever your business is, and you're not, like if you ask Alexa, hey Alexa, give me three agents in Los Angeles, if you're not one of those three agents, you will disappear. It's like DoorDash. It's like if you're hungry and you look for a restaurant, you're gonna pick from these ones it chooses for you, as opposed to, unless you have it by name, like I definitely want Dave's Hot Chicken, you know, like, or whatever. You know, yeah. so if they're not asking for you by name, it's gonna let the AI choose who you see. And that is new. And that
SEO,
is new.
But for AI, right?
SEO, but for AI. Yeah. Okay, we're running out of time, which I hate because I always love talking to you. I feel like we could talk for hours and hours. What is something that the public doesn't know that people, that's kind of brimming behind the scenes that you're getting a feel of in your conversations and investigations in your research?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. I think that one is the state of the market, right? Like we talk to a lot of pretty successful folks in the real estate industry just because they successful people tend to be more plugged into the news and, you know, responsive when we call them.
And that's why I'm doing the show.
Exactly. Right. Right. And, you know, like one of the things that has really surprised me is like even people who, you would know, like famous people are saying mm-hmm. like these are hard times, right? Like
I
think consumers are looking at it and they're like, I can't afford a house, or, you know, agent commissions are too high. Right. And I think that maybe the public is not quite aware of how difficult it actually is right now for the agent community and how slow it has been for several years now. I recently wrote about this for one of our pieces, where it's like in this time, these challenging times, like it's kind of inspiring to see the folks who are still grinding and still going. And I think that that's kind of invisible. Like, you don't realize if you're a consumer how hard your agent is.
How hard it is to close a deal. Listen, that's because we have created an entire public-facing part of our industry that's like, everything's okay. We do it with our clients. We say, look, we're going to try and make this the most seamless transaction possible. Meanwhile, we're not sleeping at night. We don't even want to talk to our husband. Like, we're like stressing out. We're having high cortisol. We're waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning. We're answering text messages at 6 a.m. Like, it is intense and stressful to be in a people-pleasing industry in this market environment. Like, no one's winning it. The sellers always feel like they're leaving money on the table. The buyers always feel like they're paying too much. It is stressful, always down to like the last minute. But we have made it our public face to be like, everything's okay here. You know, we got this handled, you know, which probably comes down to some like childhood, like alcoholic parents thing. Like, if you want to make it look like we're handlers, you know, there's something in there where we've been conditioned to not let anybody see how the sausage is made. And then the NAR lawsuit comes along and they're like, tell everybody all the things that you're doing. And then you saw James Dwiggins has this new thing called Raise. Have you interacted at all with that platform?
Interacted is probably an overstatement. I am aware of it. We've covered it.
Okay.
I haven't personally used it or anything like that. But, you know, we're aware okay. that there are projects, that being one
so,
of the projects.
Yeah, Raise is like supposed to give agents a way to quantify yeah. what it is that they're actually doing. I have not used it either. It's free with some MLSs. It's free with my Florida MLS. So I'm going to dig into it. Maybe I'll add that into a new thing. Maybe I'll test run it and then call you and tell you what I think of
it. Yeah, I love it.
But I'm a little bit nervous about the timesheet thing kind of thing, if that's what it is, because it's more than our time. It's our experience. It's the 20 right. years of experience of doing this that I am delivering to my clients every time that I sell a house.
Right?
It's
like you build relationship with an inspector that you've had for 20 years.
That
right?
too. So, that too. You know. But it also, like, the real hurdle jumping is in experience. And yeah, that is totally. Something that, you know, I think it's hard to quantify, you know, it's Absolutely. Track record ultimately. And you hear agents all the time being like, oh my God, I was doing this deal with this guy. And he's like, I've been in the business for 15 years. And you want to like write him off when you're a young agent. But when now I've been in the business for 20 years. And when I hear people say that, I say, okay, it's really saying I've got battle scars. I've been in the trenches. I've had to fight right. to stay alive. That's what they're saying. You know, or the yeah. reason why I add this clause into my addendums is because I've lived and learned. I've been bitten, you know, and I'm not doing that again.
Right.
So,
well, I think, you know, I this is not necessarily timely for right now specifically, but I think it's sort of always true is that process is largely invisible to consumers. Like I had to buy and sell houses 7 or 8 times before I started to really grasp kind of this network of experience and contacts and all this that the agent, there's one agent yeah. I've worked the most with, and grasp how much she was doing and how much I was benefiting right. from that, those resources that she has built over a lifetime.
And yep. Well, I hope you wrote her a great testimonial, Jim, because
yeah,
we need
yeah.
those
You
too.
Know what? My wife is actually in the beginning process of joining her brokerage. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it's going to so be all in the family.
We have a long relationship.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I'm sad to say that we're out of time, but I so appreciate you coming on The Clean Close, and I assure you I will be inviting you again, and if you accept, I'd just be delighted.
Yeah,
thanks,
it's been a pleasure.
So much, Jim. All right. Cheers. I have a whole homework assignment for you guys out there. If you could please do this. Okay. Perplexity has launched a new web browser. It's called Comet. I don't know if you've heard about it. You can download it. And it's a very different look and feel than like a Chrome browser or whatever. So what it is promising is that it can ask questions, it can read and summarize your searches and act kind of like a virtual assistant for you in a way with your interaction with websites. Okay, I downloaded the browser. I opened it up. It just looks like Perplexity to me. Like it just looks like regular Perplexity. And I feel a little bit like I might be missing something. So here's your homework assignment. Download Perplexity Comet browser and tell me if you are loving it, what you love, what you hate. Okay, put it in the comments. I might even ask you if you want to jump on the show and show us how to use it properly, because right now it just kind of looks like Perplexity AI. Okay, I want to see it work like magically, okay? It's supposed to be fast, contextual, transparent. I'm just not getting that. So yeah, download Perplexity, the Comet web browser. Let me know how that goes. Now I want to just wrap with one thing. I really wanted to get to LinkedIn stuff today, but we ran out of time, so I'll get there, I promise. But I was driving up Crescent Heights, and Crescent Heights is a street that has a lot of older buildings on it in Los Angeles and West Hollywood. And there is this big building around Crescent Heights and Sunset that is a 1920 Beaux-Arts building, just one of those old Hollywood glam buildings. It's taller than a lot of buildings you see in LA. It's got this beautiful kind of gothic architecture in a way. It's just so beautiful. And I've walked past that building for 26 years, okay? I've seen it, I've walked past it, and it always had the most beautiful wood grid windows. And yesterday when I drove by, I saw that they did probably what was an environmental restoration, or I'm not restoration, a replacement of all the windows. And they replaced them with the windows that have no grids, that just look like vinyl windows. And it cheapened the entire building to me. Like it took all of the soul of the entire building away. And so I had this thought, like, God, I hope that's, you know, Jim was talking about, oh, well, he's not really concerned about listing descriptions being written by AI. But in our industry, the one thing that we really do have is our unique voice. And when I was training agents on listing descriptions, I always taught them how to write, like, with their own unique voice. And now everyone's leaning on ChatGPT, and I get it. I do get it. But I would just encourage you guys out there to not be the building that replaces all of the historical windows with new vinyl windows, thinking it's better when it changes the entire character of the building and makes it uglier, in fact, and less unique, less significant, and ultimately just like less beautiful. And, you know, protect your voice. We can't let AI replace our voice. Let it do the data stuff. But, you know, our souls are uniquely our own. So I want to leave you with that. Thank you so much for tuning in to The Clean Close. I'm Courtney Pullis, and I'll see you next time. Bye.